Welcome to an October Two Peas in a Podcast. This is Michelle.
And Trevor.
And we've been banished to the shed. Trevor.
We do have lights in the shed, so if we talk for too long, we won't be in the dark.
We won't be in the dark. Nita has banished us to the shed, but we'll forgive her because she's cooking us dinner. So we're very happy with that. So this month, Trevor,
yes.
The topic, gardening keeps you young. However, the young should be in the garden. We're talking about gardening with kids today.
Yeah, I don't think we've done it before. We've certainly touched on it. And well, I think when you have a kid, you bring it up inside for safety, and then it is time to move them out, because although it's safe inside, outside you've got all the world, and eventually it's going to come to you. I mean, possibly those lawn lovers would say we'll move them out into the lawn, which is probably a good first option, you know. So those who love the lawn, you can roll on it, you know, you can have games on it, you can pet your dog on it, you can do all sorts of things. So it's possible you can get away without having a garden, just a lawn. But
I don't know, as a kid I remember, like, Mum putting the sprinkler on the lawn. And in summer you get your bathers, true. And that was what you did. You put the sprinkler on the lawn and you ran up and down the lawn, and there were those tiny little blossoms. We had the clover lawn, and someone would invariably get stung by a bee, and that would be the evening over. But I do like a lawn, even though I don't actually have any anymore.
No, well, I got cut grass. I don't have a lawn, but we do have friends who are fantastic lawn people. And, yeah, it is beautiful to have kids play. And as they get older, they can kick the footy and so forth, because we haven't defined the age of kids, really.
No.
I mean, it could be
65. We're young at heart, Trevor. I think of us as children. We act childishly sometimes.
But also, most of the things we say here are actually true throughout your whole life, you know?
Yeah. But it's about, I guess, certainly my son now as an adult, he wasn't very keen to help me in the garden growing up, but now he's really enjoying. He's revegetated the lawn in his rental property with great pride. He's taken some of the tomatoes that Two Peas in a Podcast was selling, and he has a real love of a garden, and him and his wife are both really keen. And I guess from the time he was little, and you would have been the same too with your daughter, you know, they're in the playpen and they're in the garden from the time they're tiny.
Yeah.
It's really important, really important.
Well, it is and it isn't, because we're probably fortunate in that we've got gardens all around us, you know, whereas if you're living in a city or something, you can get by playing on swings and slippery dips and stuff. It's not quite the same as what we're going to be talking about, which is, you know, moving into where there is nature. That's basically the thing. I mean, I said to you earlier that if everyone planted a tree when they had a child, it would actually be about 8 billion trees and make a difference, because it currently would. The 20 and 30-year-olds and even younger are worried about their future. And so gardening, pretty well universally, is seen as a preliminary to saving the world or saving the planet, because whether you agree with climate change or all of that sort of thing, it does seem that as we get to a massive population, the more we need to feed people, the more we need to clean our act up, you know, actually regenerate the deserts that we created with our overstocking, as well as try not to pollute the air so much and try not to have so much toxicity around us, you know. So I think for us, we're talking really about organic gardening all the time.
Yeah, that's true. And about, you know, kind of creating those spaces. Just looking here, what we're talking about, like, it's about that idea around our fresco living. Like, not that you go into the garden, but that the garden is actually just part of your living space. It's part of your daily interaction. And I think that's what's really important. There doesn't seem to be that sense of, you know, when we were growing up, you just went outside and played, and there sometimes not always by choice, get outside. And if Mum was mopping the floor, you went outside. And if it was cold, you rugged up and you went outside. Like, playing outside was just what you did. And I think that's something that we're sort of talking about a bit today, about that sense that
We've made too that you build dams out of the water running out of the hose, and you'd play in the dirt, and you'd have a sand pit, you'd have toys, you would do a lot of things outside, because basically inside is restrictive. I also think that we are people who see that peace and quiet and tranquility is in the beauty of nature. Okay, you can't overlook a lake or the beach every time, but you can look at a rose or a flower and you can sort of enjoy the insects and so forth. So it is nature study. And I think the whole idea of a kindergarten, how do you say it in the Netherlands? Kindergarten?
Yeah, kindergarten. Yeah, I think so.
I think it's a German word as well, so it's pretty well universal.
I think they stole it from us, though, Trevor.
Montessori, she's Italian, wasn't
it? Montessori was Italian. Yeah, so.
But at any rate, the idea of children in the garden is pretty well ageless, I think.
I agree. I think it's so important because you've got here, take the risk. I think there's always the, you know, the flies, the bees, the mozzies. It's a bit too much sun. There's not enough sun. You know,
rain,
yeah, so there's rain. It's a bit drizzly. Get some vitamin D. Go out there, get some vitamin D and be adventurous and explore. And the other thing is too, you don't need much. Like my son would have the old spoons. And what's really hilarious is I guess the house that I'm in now, he's been in since he was seven. So sometimes I'll go and plant something new and I'll dig up some of his army men or an old spoon that he used to do. And he'd make these big tunnels in the garden. You don't need lots of fancy equipment, and it's certainly not the plastic stuff. Oh gosh, you know, because it just breaks down. It's a nightmare.
I do think it's a mistake to go, you know, buying plastic tool sets and plastic wheelbarrows for your kids, because although that might seem to be relevant, they're pretty much trash and they're not really needed. You can use your beach bucket, you can use your trowel and that from the beach. You're not really going to be doing much. The adults are still going to be there doing the gardening until you come of an age, and it's probably about seven or so before you really start digging and start doing things for yourself. So there's this long period of just watching and looking and exploring things. But on the other hand, there's nothing stopping you planting seeds and picking peas. And, you know, there are a lot of things you can do, but you're probably not going to be a gardener until you're, I would say, seven at the earliest, but I might be wrong. You know?
Well, I remember one time encouraging my niece in the veggie garden, and she was probably about two or three. And as I was planting, she was politely following me and pulling the plant out, you know, and I thought, okay, we're clearly not ready for this. I just filled a hole up with some mud and let her play in that. I mean, Samuel had his own mud pile, but yeah, it is around planting things. And I guess looking at, like here, planting sunflowers and corn, and I love the places to be hiding in, but also about where they get so much bigger than kids. Kids love that this flower is bigger than them, or got broad beans, sort of wander through those. And even my granddaughter's only 20 months, she's quite happy to rip leaves off things, but she loves that it's bigger than her. So I think that's really...
Yeah, I think they do have a credibility gap. When people say, oh, you'll grow up to be an adult one day, that doesn't mean anything to them until they're about teenagers, when they suddenly see they are growing, you know. Yeah. So to see something that does grow fairly quickly, within 3 months a seed will go from nothing to above their heads. And so that gives them the clue that there is growth, things are growing, they do grow fast. And sunflowers and corn, I think they're pretty much the favourite for that reason.
Oh, they're such fun. And I used to, when I taught junior primary, I'd plant sunflowers in the patch that was outside our classroom window. I was quite lucky I had the veggie garden there. And then we'd do the sun, you know, like the sun, and you'd watch the head of the sunflower travel throughout the day. And it was so exciting. And they just loved it. And they would be like, oh, that's so great. And just even like with corn, and corn straight off the bush is just like, oh my God, it's just sweetness personified.
It is the only sweet thing that, I mean, you've got to really eat it within the hours. It's not sweet, it's starchy. Yeah, so I think corn and sunflowers, yes. I do think you can teach there. You can be a teacher. You can say that it all starts from the ground. And crops like radish and spud in particular, you dig out. And so you see that there are things in the ground growing. And there is so much life. I saw a beautiful program on mushrooms on YouTube. There was this... I think he was a professor, he was a photographer really, but the number of different types of mushrooms and the little that we know about them is nothing like what there is to know. I mean, Australians are particularly bad really in that we only pick about two or three types, and the supermarkets have only got two or three types, and yet there's hundreds, particularly in parts of Europe and that, where people have learnt to which ones are good and which ones aren't, or all around the world, really. So there is a lot to learn about fungi and lichen. Apparently lichen is so difficult to understand that you sort of need a degree in philosophy to understand them, because the way they germinate is just about the most obtuse manner ever. So, yeah, I do think you start out teaching about the ground. I usually talk about the soil as the first thing in gardening. Really, it's soil, sunshine and water that are the three essential elements. It's important to know that don't use the chemical fertilizers. They are no good. They wash out. Whereas the organic fertilizers are permanent. They do rot in the soil and they do stay there forever, really.
Yeah.
And so you build up that soil. It's also important to remember drainage. I mean, if it's boggy and waterlogged all the time, it's not going to grow a lot of things, although you can grow things there, but not really good for gardening as a whole. So I think teaching them, well, radish are particularly a child-orientated thing, because in 2 days they're up and 2 weeks so you're eating, you know.
It's like those microgreens that we talked about a few months ago. They're another great one to just get them so that, because kids like that immediacy sort of thing, although my son would say that plants, so they learn patience. But I think also that the good thing about like peas in particular and radishes, with any of the vegetables, they love to harvest them. But there's something particularly fun about with the peas and the picking, yet the actual plant stays there, and working out what you pick and what you don't, and eating it straight away. It's a bit hard to do that with the spuds.
Yeah, well, it's true. I mean, that foraging is an important thing. I also think that, well, peas perhaps are not that easy, but radish is almost fail-safe.
Yeah.
And it's so quick, it certainly teaches a lesson of growth. Well, in order to get the flowers, you really do need bees and moths and butterflies and all of the
Pollinators,
thank you very much. Well, because they pollinate flowers, they actually are responsible for all the produce, both flowers and things like sunflowers and corn. They all require pollination, except perhaps for tomatoes, believe it or not, which blow in the wind and they spread their pollen that way. And we also know that corn's like that, in that the male is on top, that sprouting bit up the very top, the tassels, and that falls down onto the silks of the corn, and that's the way. But most things rely upon the bees to fertilise them.
I agree, and I think what's really important too is that kids learn to just sit and observe, just sit quietly, watch what's going on. You don't have to touch the animal, you can just enjoy the bees. If the quieter you sit, the more likely a butterfly will hang around. I think many a child's learned that with great disappointment as suddenly the butterfly takes off at an alarming rate because they've gone, oh, and flicked a branch or something. And you know what? Let's face it, the wildlife is the favourite part of the garden for the kids. They love finding
visitors.
Bugs and bees, and just need to learn to teach them to pick it up straight away.
They do seem to be busy.
Here's a brown snake. Perhaps don't touch it.
Spiders, probably not. But the mornings and evenings seem to be the most active time, as the birds are nesting and waking up and eating and so forth. So there are certain times. There are also certain plants, like we both grow borage, and borage seems to bring in the bees, doesn't it?
I love
borage. It goes all the time. Well, most flowering things do. Sage, mustard, brassicas are good. The berries, if we got one there called the caperberry, and that's got its own butterfly. Yeah, it seems to fly in from another state or something.
No COVID restrictions there.
Well, I didn't think anyone around here would have caperberries, but we got the butterfly flying in.
Oh, fabulous. You've got a few caperberries, haven't you?
I'm growing some new one from seed too. It might be successful. But you've got rosemary and lavender, and they are fantastic for the way they flower and attract
Absolutely.
Of these things. And it is beauty of the flowers and the smell of the flowers. They attract both us and all the other creatures, really, because the birds come for that too, don't they?
And from a really young age, I think as well, you can be saying to kids, I think probably my granddaughter wouldn't have even been one, and we were already kind of encouraging that smells, and now she'll smell a flower before she looks at it. And you think that's a really lovely, it's kind of really opening up all the senses, which flowers do. You know, they've got the sight, the touch, the smell, some of them the taste, like nasturtiums. I love eating nasturtium flowers, and many a Ina Blyton book, I think it is, has nasturtium nasturtium sandwiches with that slightly peppery taste. And
I think these are good for mental health too. There's a lot of talk about mental health. I think smells do make you feel good. I think they do. Automatically. They like exercise. If you exercise, you have the good feeling afterwards, even though you don't like doing it. You know?
No, I agree. That really beautiful sense of, I guess, the olfactory senses. But even I'm thinking, like, I will smell things and I'll think, oh, my opa used to grow that. Rosemary, lavender, all those things, you just kind of have that beautiful... Yeah, it's a bit hard to smell lavender and that and still feel sad.
And looking too, I am beginning to infiltrate my pure veggie garden with flowers.
I know.
I'm starting
Trevor,
to...
Okay, listeners, just quietly. Trevor starts growing flowers and is immediately this guru expert on them. They're everywhere and they look amazing. They're so beautiful.
We have got poppies, marigolds, cosmos, petunias. We got the herbs. We got carnations, geraniums and sweet peas. And we don't even have to worry about it, you know, because they all self-seed. And they're all hardy too, so there is something good just about being generous and allowing them to grow. Like, I'm never going to be short of marigolds in my life.
No, God, you saw my marigold patch. I mean, that took over the basil. And one of my friends said, but your basil will self-seed. I said, have you seen the marigolds? They will not be happening. But I love it because it's this gorgeous splash of colour. And I love that you can kind of walk along and think, I don't remember planting the forget-me-nots there, but somehow they've come along.
And you often have failures, but next to the failure, something else is growing.
And it's so bizarre because I love lamb's ears. And I had them growing along this path and they were never successful. And then I moved them literally to the other side of the path and they've gone berserk. And I'm like, that's what I love as well, that sense of mystery and that sense of adventure. And just kind of trying to encourage that with kids and kind of being like, not being so structured in the garden, I think is really, really important. And that's the beauty of when things self-seed everywhere. It's like, don't get caught up in having everything structured and in garden beds, because there's not much fun in that.
Yeah, I do think it's generous of you to allow things to grow, and I do think it's... I mean, I think both of us have a sort of freedom in mind when we're gardening. If you had it all in rows, like a factory producing things, it's not the same joy, is it?
No.
It's hard work.
No. I remember reading somewhere, it was probably my guru, Jackie French, she's amazing, where she said, if you plant the vegetables all in a row, it really helps the bugs to know that a few steps along is the next plant, the birds and stuff. And I love that idea of the unstructured garden. And I think if you do want to encourage kids in a garden, you have to have a bit of a sense of flexibility and a loose structure around it. Otherwise, it just becomes this thing that, oh, don't tread on that, be careful of that. And, I mean, of course you don't want them to tread all over the veggie gardens, but...
I also think it's part of that strategy too. I know what I'm doing nowadays after a lifetime of gardening is that I have a box that's got all the seeds in it that I'm going to plant this summer. And I walk around thinking, where am I going to plant them this year? Because I don't want to put them in the same spot as last year.
Yeah.
And that does become the logic. It's a hidden logic in that anyone looking at it would never figure out why you did what you did. But the answer is that you're trying to rotate at the same time. And that introduces a wild card, you know, in that you almost cannot see the logic of it. I started out talking about trees, planting trees. Fruit trees are sort of underestimated. It's nice to have height in your garden. And we talked about corn and
usually sunflower. I'm the height.
Yeah, well. There are things grow bigger than you, though.
Oh, my God.
And one of the reasons, I guess, you put a tree in for every child you have is that that child will live long enough to see the thing grow well and truly mammoth. But fruit trees are a good one, really, in that they grow fairly quickly.
Yes, they do, actually.
And they attract the birds. I always say, give the birds the top half and take the bottom half yourself, because they'll eventually grow.
I don't say that, but they just do it anyway. But it's true. Like, the top of my grapevine has been pecked away. I actually don't care if the birds take the top parts, and I think I don't mind, and I have the underneath. If I feel particularly attached, or particularly around the peaches, I must admit they do like the peaches, I just cover the ones that I want.
It will get so big too that it won't matter in time. And I always find nests too. I always think it's fascinating to find nests. And the buddleias are good ones, aren't they? Called the butterfly. So a purple or white buddleia is a very good addition. It will grow above your head.
And quickly, mine, I think, have just in 18 months have just gone bananas. Beautiful natural fence.
Yeah,
lovely natural fence. You've got a gorgeous alleyway. You've created an alleyway with your buddleia, which is just fabulous.
And you keep pruning it. That one you can prune down to a height that you want, but it is very good for nesting. And so there's a lot of reasons to put in permanent shrubs and native shrubs into your garden, because the birds need to nest somewhere. I mean, I think I got 50 resident sparrows. You wouldn't think that was good, but it is partially bad. But because I feed my chooks, and chooks are another element of the garden that are worth having, but because I feed grain to them, anything left over goes to the sparrows, and boy, don't they know about it, and the crows. The crows now are coming in hunting packs. It's spring. Everyone's starving out there in the wild, you know. There's not enough food to go around. So,
and chooks and ducks, and you've got here quails, which quails are a bit an unappreciated bird. I remember my cousin breeding quails and selling them to the local pet shops. I think he made quite a bit of pocket money for himself. But ducks and chooks, they're really delightful pets for kids, and I am crazy about my ducks. If they could please return home, that would be good. I'm not sure where they've toddled off to. But the chooks, nothing more exciting than gathering eggs.
Yeah, it's good for gathering eggs. You can pat them. You can identify with them. They're your best weeders. They're better than a weeding machine, you know.
Yeah.
You have to fence in all of those. Quails, well, I think ducks and chooks really need to be fenced in, because the foxes are about. I'm in a rural area, more so than Michelle is, but there's definitely foxes roaming about, and there are also cats roaming about, and there's also dogs roaming about, so you have to fence them in. And you do feed them. They cost money, but they pay back in terms of they absorb all your food waste, apart from the onions and eggshells and a few other things, coffee grinds. But you can feed a lot of your food waste direct to the chooks. You get paid back in terms of manure and of eggs. I think all these things are giving you an idea of just what the children are interested in. All these things are fascinating to children. Yeah. It's like going to a zoo.
Well, that's what I think too. I know when my granddaughter comes over, she's lucky enough to live in a really quite nice rental at the moment with a really lovely garden. But of course, my garden's had more stuff thrown in it. And she just loves it. And it's a bit of a jungle, and it's a bit of this and a bit of that. And she likes the chooks. And the chooks, of course, see small children and immediately think that they'll have something interesting to throw to them, so they're quite happy to kind of run up. And but I guess the big thing is making it this really lovely, normalised part of your day. I think that's probably the biggest message I want people to know, is that it shouldn't be this separate thing or this idea that you're such a treat. It should almost be just such a lovely, natural part of your daily life to just be out in the garden. Go and sit out there and throw a rug on the lawn and have a little picnic. Take your lunch out there and just let the kids potter around. And I think that's where they develop that love for nature. And then that's where, as you were saying earlier, Trevor, around, you know, we worry about the planet. That's how you get people to care for the planet. Give them that really early appreciation of nature, and they do want to keep it. Both our kids are very avid gardeners. I mean, it's not like they were out there when we were younger, but they remember how much they love all that, and suddenly you want to preserve it. So what are we going to do next month, Trevor?
Well, we haven't kept up to date with what's happening in the garden, and it's springtime.
I know, we need to do that.
We've both planted a lot of tomatoes and a lot of other stuff. We're both revising our paths and the whole nature of the...
I'm putting in more garden beds that I won't have time to look after, but I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm still putting them in, and then I figure I have to go out there and fill them up, which is nice. So next month we'll do a really... Busy in the garden episode.
We have to talk fast. We might not get through it all.
All right. So thank you very much, Trevor.
And thank you, Michelle. And we'll see you next month.